Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Hello, Facebook friends. Let's do a radio show. It's Friday.
Information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Up North News with Pat Kreitlow starts now.
Well, here we are, and good morning. It's Friday, Dad Shirt Friday, August 26th. Welcome to our Friday coffee break. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Luke Mathers is here. On the show later, State Representative Francesca Hong and media critic Mark Jacob, former editor of the Chicago Tribune. And it's a bright, sunny day where I am. Might be foggy where you are, but hopefully a little nicer later. Going to have some off and on precipitation in parts, which is unfortunate, but Labor Day weekend yet to come all across Wisconsin here. I mentioned the sunny here where I'm in a different studio for one more day. And if you're watching on Facebook or Twitter and you see a banner behind me for the Devil's Advocates radio show, again, most people on the radio know what we're talking about. This was a station started by a couple of guys who decided to call their show the Devil's Advocates radio show. And now their radio station is called Devil Radio. And when I try to explain this to people, I just sound like another godless liberal, you know, and I have to let them know it's part of that whole exchange of being the devil's advocate.
It's a lot of backstory that you got to
there
fill
is
in,
when
it's all.
When you get that backstory, you get either the light bulb goes on, they go, oh, that's clever, or they, you know, tilt their head like a cocker spaniel, and you just realize you've lost them. But at least today, with the sunshine here, we don't have to talk about the Brewers losing because they didn't play yesterday. They
started the nice thing about the day off.
Yes, you know, I'll take a travel day that way. But they start a 3-game homestand against the Cubs, and then 3 more at home against Pittsburgh. And they got to go 6-0. There's just no other way around it. I was going to, as I try to do sometimes, start with a few moments of what I like to call little nuggets of Wisconsin sense and try to bring some perspective to something in the news. But I really have to turn it over to somebody else for this segment, and I will in just a sec. The topic is the Biden administration decision to forgive a certain segment of student loans, which has brought about great wailing and gnashing of teeth in some circles, despite the immense jolt it's going to give to the economy. And certainly it's a commentary on how not affordable we've made higher education and so forth and so on. My favorite has been the White House Twitter account has suddenly taken on this new edge. And yesterday was a masterpiece, starting with Marjorie Taylor Greene, but then rolling through tweet after tweet after tweet after tweet of somebody criticizing having loans forgiven, followed by a screenshot of one of their loans being forgiven, usually a PPP loan or something like that. And of course, the two words that sum it all up best on Twitter are "this you," and on it goes. And you're thinking, who figured this out? Who figured out finally how to use Twitter in the White House? And once I learned who it was, I was so happy. Luke, were you following it at the time when the official account for the state of New Jersey was talking smack back at people?
Oh, yeah.
It was brilliant. And at first, of course, it was anonymous. Somebody would post up, you know, who gave the state of New Jersey this Twitter account? And the response from the New Jersey account would be "your mother," you know, and it just got worse from there.
Or something along the lines of like "mind your own business." Like, yeah. it was very anonymous. And for the most part, when you have somebody like official Twitter accounts like those, like for the state of New Jersey or the White House, you don't necessarily only have one person working on it, but you don't want to necessarily know the personality either, because they're entering a persona of that body. And that's kind of the nice thing about those social media accounts. And I thought the White House was doing a terrific job with that yesterday.
So then somebody put two and two together yesterday and helped us understand that Megan Coyne, the young woman who had been part of Governor Phil Murphy's 2017 campaign, then ran the New Jersey account, left for the White House, and is now running Twitter, or at least part of the Twitter team at the White House. So it all makes perfect sense now. So you had that point of view coming from the White House on critics. And then I wanted to turn things over for this last minute or so to read a little bit from Alexandra Petri of The Washington Post. And her opinion column headline is, "Stop improving things right now. Everyone must suffer as I did. This is disgusting. This is awful. I have just received word that life is getting marginally better for some people, and I am white hot with fury. This is the worst thing that could possibly happen. I did not suffer and strive and work my fingers to the bone so that anybody else could have a life that does not involve suffering and striving and working of fingers to the bone. I demand to see only bones, no more fingers." You can see where this is going from here, but it raises the very valid point that, yes, we can talk about the details of, you know, how you structure something in the budget, but the concept underlying all of this is, it doesn't speak well to a lot of folks who look at those of us who did receive a hand up and try to make something of ourselves and succeed at it and have that burden lightened just a little bit so that we could have better economy and just a better quality of life overall in the country. So again, our thanks to President Biden, but more importantly, our thanks to the White House Twitter account. We'll be back with State Representative Francesca Hong after this. You're up north. Happy Friday. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Wrightlow and being joined by State Representative Francesca Hong. We'll talk a bit about current events in the news, but also her perfectly themed Friday tweets that she puts out. But I have to admit, it puts us both in a real bind. We can't really say much on the radio about what it is fully. And I have to admit that, you know, part of my the whole reason I'm what's the right word? Fangirl is no longer a term that's in vogue, but this woman will drop F-bombs on a dime but only for people who deserve it. And God bless her for doing it. Fran, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Pat.
By the way,
it's good to be back.
I don't have the dump button here, Luke, so that's totally you. And I'm afraid it's going to be me just as much as you that talks about this. Let's get to the point. It's called WTF Friday, and it's, you know, we don't want to dwell in bad news necessarily, but I think it's great that somebody each week kind of collects an assortment of stories that make you use those three little letters when you wonder sometimes what kind of a world we're living in. Was there a particular story or something that was the genesis for WTF Friday?
I wish there was one particular story that was absurd enough to really, you know, that this could be born out of, but our campaign team really was just trying to figure out more ways to engage and really make our megaphone larger. And we knew that we didn't want to be sending out, you know, donation requests and things and all of our asks. And so how do we make sure people feel like they're informed and really a part of something and to make the decision for themselves to really have the receipts to be able to take back to folks, this is what's really going on.
Well, it's that you said team. I mean, teamwork is really a part of it here. You've been around the Capitol long enough now, because you only have to be there 5 minutes to figure this out, that there are plenty of people who are there for themselves. And that, you know, it's I, me, my, and I love the mentality of, no, I don't love it, but of some people who are just like, oh, I'm in the toughest district and I'm this and I'm that. And you know, you all have to help me. And then there's folks like you that say, this is a team, who can we help? And part of this is, like you said, it's not the usual fundraising. It's something that brings people together, feels like you're on a team. And by the way, since we're all here on this team, why don't you help out some of the other people here on the team?
Yeah, and I will say that it's important to recognize that I have some massive progressive privilege being in the Blue District in Madison. And so I want to be able to provide, you know, whether it's messaging or say certain things that some of my colleagues have difficulty saying in their districts, that they know that they have a person on their team who can also point to the absurdities and the fascism that is the Republican Party right now. So you're absolutely right. We're not going to get through what I think is a progressive movement, and we're not going to build on this unless we work as a team and understand that this is a collective effort.
And this is where I'm sure people who know me are going to try to read into the tea leaves, but I'm not going to go any further than this. What Fran just told you is what you're supposed to do if you are in what's called a safe district, Democrat or Republican. If you're safe, part of your role is to help the rest of the team, because it does you no good if, yeah, you get elected in a safe district, but you're always in the minority because you're not going into some of these other areas and helping out. And frankly, one of my biggest frustrations was some people from safe districts who didn't lift a finger, did nothing, did the bare minimum, talked about, you know, how busy they were when basically they were just there, you know, collecting a paycheck going home. They didn't care if they were in the minority or the majority. It just didn't matter. And you'd look at those campaign finance reports every so often and find out that while some of us were, you know, working our hardest, they'd raised, you know, $200, you know, for a reporting period. It was just absolutely maddening. And I'm just so thankful that you decided not to play that game, that you've got your eye on a bigger picture, that you're part of the Wisconsin legislature, and the Wisconsin legislature is only going to be functional when there's more people with your values in it.
And our caucus shares really strong progressive values. And I think it's important to recognize that there are definitely more folks stepping up. We're headed over to Milwaukee to help Lou Anne Bird in the 84th. And that is a critical seat to obtain because there is no incumbent. And we've got a big group of Democratic caucus members from safe seats and their amazing staff coming out to help knock doors. And the good part about, I think one of the better parts of going out to different districts is you really do have conversations with people that you would have never expected. You know, I was up in Polk County last week, and it was fascinating to go from "Don't take away my semi-automatic rifles" to "Thank you so much for being a Democrat." I mean, we cannot make assumptions about the potential of every voter in this state. And I think if we humanize government a little bit more, make it accessible, make it approachable. And I think WTF Friday does just that. There are a lot of people who are thinking WTF, but if you have someone with a platform actually saying it, now we can have more conversations about what we can all do together.
Yeah, there is that commonality because, as we've said, there are plenty of people who are either centrist or lean Republican, but who still look at some of these headlines and they think the exact same thing, that this is not something they want. Now, again, you've done this enough times that there are numerous examples, so I don't mean to put you on the spot, but, you know, in terms of some of the individual headlines that you put in as part of that string, are there a couple that stand out for you?
I think, really, we don't have enough folks amplifying the Inflation Reduction Act. And I wish more candidates across the state centered climate, especially around central and northern Wisconsin, where clean water is a top issue. And so when I see the fact that we're not doing enough to protect the EPA, and from the national level down, we're not really centering the need to deeply challenge the way that we're attacking the climate crisis, and for the president to come out and actually have something that's making historic steps forward, we should all be on board with that. And then there are ways to localize it in your district. Like I said, when it comes to PFAS or other contaminants in water, that is a universal issue. There is no D or R next to it.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at just last week's thread, for example, and one of those headlines was about a Republican group in Alabama that apologized after saying that they accidentally used a picture of the GOP elephant that also contained imagery from the Ku Klux Klan, which you'd like to say you can't make this stuff up, but it's real. It was there. There was an apology. And again, it would have just kind of not been as noticed as much if a state representative in Wisconsin hadn't amplified that kind of thing to say, look, this isn't theoretical. These things are really happening.
we cannot stray away from social issues and the fact that you need to call racism for what it is and racists for who they are. And if you look at what happened with the Dobbs decision, we know that social issues are actually front and center of a lot of voters' minds. It's not just the kitchen table, economic, you know, pocketbook issues that people care about right now. They are they feel deep personal connections to social issues. So if we don't call out and really amplify the fact that there are absurd things happening across this country that are dangerous for our party and for your family, it's doing a disservice to our voters. And so I really do want the caucus and other members of a party to think about centering social justice issues as a winning issue and not just the pocketbook.
Can you talk as well as somebody who's from a metropolitan area, again, about that importance of going to other districts and understanding some of the other districts, not just from your standpoint, from an elected official standpoint, but this whole notion of there's always this natural tension. And I'll just use the Wisconsin Democratic Party as an example, but you could use either party, either state. In this case, it's, do you focus more of your resources on your heavily Democratic areas and try to squeeze a few more votes out of Madison and Milwaukee and Eau Claire because those voters are easier to find to squeeze a few more out, versus it might take you a little more time, might take you a little more resources, but there are Democratic voters scattered throughout, you know, like you said, Polk County and Barron County and Sawyer County, and don't write them off, go get them. And I've noticed that's a natural tension. I don't think that there isn't a right answer. It's always about finding balance, but what's your own spin on where a party should be really focusing its resources?
Get out of thinking in either or. Mm-hmm. We can absolutely put resources into finding trusted ambassadors in rural and other districts that aren't heavily Democratic and ensure that there are trusted members of the community with the tools that they need to go out and organize other members. And then in heavily blue districts, there has to be a focus on turnout and a focus on engaging and really encouraging young voters, because they are savvy. They have digital tools to be able to really mobilize. And so instead of thinking about, okay, do we need to just prioritize one area or the other, let's think strategically and very smart about how to make effective ambassadors everywhere. Because in the end, it's about making voters feel like they matter and that they are special. And the people who know how to do that best are the people in those communities. So give them the tools to be able to mobilize. So I think right now, I would say Milwaukee, Madison, Dana, Milwaukee counties, it's important to focus on turnout and young voters. And in those other rural areas, make sure the organizers feel valued, get credited, and have the ambassador tools that they need to go out and mobilize their communities the way they need to.
I am really hopeful that we see less of those incidents in the past where a group will come and do what's probably the fourth or fifth lit drop within the city limits someplace. There's voters in the town of, you know, X, Y, or Z just on the other side of the street. But the only walk lists, you know, that they print out for people to go visit voters, they said, no, we just have to focus here. It's where the cluster of voters are. And, you know, if we can do less of that, all the better. State Representative Francesca Hong is with us. And I want to come to your point that you just said about young people and young voters. We've talked post-Dobbs decision about women and how many more women are registering to vote than men right now. Do you share my sentiment that young voters are actually going to turn out more than ever, not just because they've now seen through their entire young lifetime total inaction on gun violence, but now they're seeing complete hostility toward the safeguards that were meant to keep their teachers and others safe? Or am I reading too much into it and young voters are just going to, you know, be as distant as young voters typically have been?
I think we're going to see young voters come out, and we're also going to see young voters starting to run for office more. Take, for example, the gentleman from Florida who will be our first Gen Z representative in the House. I think that young people not only feel a sense of purpose to protect their generation, but just like you mentioned, protect the people that have been trying to care for them. The people who are going to meet movement moments are young organizers who know how to make sure that a community feels protected and safe, because they know that that's a value that is universal. And I think that's how they're also going to connect with other generations, is that we all want safety. We all want opportunities. We all know that it doesn't have to be like this, but we have to keep telling each other that and not just listen to the politicians.
It does. I have before, and I will again, offer a stinging indictment of, for whatever reason, my generation, you know, those of us in our mid to late 50s who have just, we've turned the cynicism on too high. There are people older than us that vote more and are more involved. And now it's so refreshing to see that there are people younger than us that vote more and get more involved. How my generation gave us Scott Walker and Paul Ryan and Sean Duffy and all that, I never know. I'll never know. I offer this blanket apology, Fran, to you and everybody else younger who's stepping up for this. State Representative Francesca Hong is with us. We're going to take a break, talk a bit more on the other side of this. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
And thank you, Don Rue. Friday morning, this is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. State Representative Francesca Hong is joining us this hour to talk about a host of issues. We talked a bit about some of the headlines that she highlights every Friday that are meant to motivate people. And in case you think that she doesn't understand that sometimes people get complacent as well, I'm looking at a tweet from August 17th. It says it very well. No complacency. We spoke yesterday about the special election win in a congressional district in New York. We've certainly talked about the vote in Kansas. Those are signs, but those are not promises. Nothing's guaranteed this year, Fran.
Yeah, and I think it's important to recognize that the opposition has been focusing on turnout and engaging vulnerable communities for a while. They have been building infrastructure for many years, and they've had more resources to do so. So regardless of poll numbers and wins, it's important to take time absolutely to pause and celebrate, but we can't, you know, ever take our, what did someone say, that the pedal to the metal? It's no complacency until November.
That's right. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting fan mail here. Dr. Kristen Lyerly chimed in. Tell her hi. Tell her thank you. She was one of the people that helped me in 2000 running for assembly. You probably get this all the time. You get fan mail while you're making radio appearances.
Dr. Lyerly is fantastic, and her advocacy and really just clear, concise messaging around the importance of centering reproductive rights in political campaigns, I think, is spot on. And we need more physicians really speaking out on this. So I admire her courage always.
And funny as hell. My God, we need more of that in politics.
It's hilarious. Well, I'm laughing just thinking about some of the things we talked about while we were campaigning in 2020.
It's good to be fearless, or at least, you know, be that way as often as you can up front. Let's take yesterday's news, or the news of the week, about student loan debt, part of it being forgiven by the Biden administration. You had a great message yesterday about that, and your, what you would say to people who have some kind of negative feelings about it. What is it that you wanted to express about it?
You know, I received a PPP loan. My business received two, as did Speaker Voss's. And I think it's important to recognize that when you have a tax system that gives tax breaks to the wealthy, that in itself is debt relief, that when you have government providing loans to small business or large business owners from anywhere from 10,000 to over 3 million, and those are fully forgiven, how in the world did those folks have the audacity to say something about $10,000 being forgiven to folks who chose to pursue an education and participate actively to better our communities? And for someone who didn't finish college, you know, I dropped out and I still celebrated with every single person who felt some relief, because I know exactly how it feels to be able to have taken money out or have asked for money and to know that you don't have to pay that back and that you can do something better for someone else because of it.
Right. It's that investment that we make in ourselves by doing so, by recognizing those folks who have those little struggles that aren't so little to them, you know, on any given month. And that can include things like healthcare. It could include things like affordable housing or, you know, a better transportation system. All kinds of things, Fran, that we could do with a $4 to $5 billion state surplus that lawmakers are sitting on right now. And we'll get to Governor Evers' plan for that in just a moment. But I would just remind people, if you're looking for some good reading, the good representative wrote a column, and we published it back in early March when the legislature gaveled itself out of session. And, you know, as you would expect somebody who, you know, runs a restaurant to tell you, there's work to be done. There's no time for, you know, a paid vacation. And you rightly called them out. So they've taken time off, and now, and they're still taking that time off, sitting on a surplus that could be doing so much good.
$5 billion are sitting in the state coffers of taxpayer money right now, when we know that people who are trying to get licensing to be therapists or nurses, that we have cities still suffering from the fact that there hasn't been an increase in shared revenue, so our municipalities and towns can fund things like EMS and fire stations. Governor Evers has a plan to use the surplus funds to actually invest in Wisconsinites, which is what we should be doing as government officials, to establish caregiver tax credits, to make sure that veterans and those surviving spouses are of tax credit eligibility. I mean, this money should be going back to Wisconsinites. I don't know why my Republican colleagues insist on hoarding it.
And it is. It's hoarding. I consider it a heist compared to what they're planning to do with it if they get the opportunity in January. Before we get to the races that will help determine that, I want to take a step back since we haven't had a chance to visit here on the radio before and just give our listeners a little bit more background on you. And because I've only hinted at the, you know, the restaurant and your time in the legislature. So can you give us the, you know, the elevator size understanding of who Francesca Hong is and how we came to be lucky enough to have you here?
Oh, thank you so much, Pat. I am proudly a mom, a community organizer, and I'm a service industry worker, born and raised in Madison, Wisconsin. I think I'm a lifer here. And to be honest, I the more I see Wisconsin, the more I love it. My background is in hospitality. So I've been working in restaurants for the past 15 years, dropped out of college to pursue cooking, was an executive chef at 23, opened my restaurant 6 years ago. The same year I had a kid. I always tell folks, don't open a restaurant and have a kid at the same time, but we did it. And I got into politics because grief makes you do pretty absurd things. And in 2020, after the pandemic hit, I decided it was time for working class families and folks who didn't have a political background to actually go into politics and make sure that more communities had a better voice and was one that was focused on uplifting communities and sharing a platform as opposed to making it about themselves.
It's good advice to people about the restaurant and kids, but people don't follow that. Our corollary is, you know, don't have one and then two babies in med school. But apparently, you know, some people will do funny things that way, and it definitely can take you places if you survive it. And somehow we have. We've talked to several women, several moms on the show already who are running for office or who are already in office, and it is, on the one hand, it's exactly what is needed. On the other hand, it feels like we're asking you to take on such a burden. I mean, anybody obviously who runs for office takes on a burden, but there are just so many moms, especially, but women in general, who are looking across the landscape and saying, I guess it better be me. It's time for me to step up. It's both a good and bad side, isn't it? It's kind of refreshing, but it's also, you know, it tells you something about the current leadership.
mean, we have a Democratic caucus that is majority women, and I'm so incredibly proud of that. I think moms, we have this inherent ability to multitask beyond belief while also feeling an incredible amount of guilt. And that makes us humble and that makes us human. And we do need to humanize politics more. And I think that as moms, we know the importance of having a Wisconsin that is centered in an economy of care. And when I say an economy of care, I mean respecting care workers, teachers, people who care for elderly, people who care for children, folks who are in care work, child care. I think we're seeing that because of our disinvestment and defunding those institutions, we are seeing things crumble everywhere. And so to have moms speaking with as well as on behalf of those care workers is going to be vital to creating care policy that makes sure that if and when we continue to see healthcare systems not change, we need to make sure we're at least investing in care workers.
So now I want to ask you about the other side of the coin, and that is attracting more votes from men. We're seeing that growing gap, unfortunately, in how each gender votes. It was something that somebody at lunch yesterday focused very highly on, asking me how we're going to win over more dads, more suburban men, more rural men, things like that. I certainly offered my take on it, but as a working mom, as somebody with a small business and who has talked to all of these moms and women and small business people that get in, how would you answer a question like that about what is it that's going to appeal to more dads, to more Wisconsin men, more suburban voters to either change how they voted or get involved and vote for the first time in a more progressive way?
Regardless of gender, all voters want to feel like they're special. And so I think it's really important we make all of the dads and the men feel special, even though most of the system is designed to make them feel special. Sometimes they need that extra push. And so I think one way that when I'm speaking with voters and male voters, I tend to talk about, again, just asking them what they actually care about and if they have a family and if they have a daughter, you know, what they want that future to look like and what their part in that looks like. I think it's important to ask questions, but also to ask questions of voters regardless of gender and make sure that you're talking about what they actually care about. And then in terms of mobilizing and engaging men, I think right now they're, again, I want to center it in care. How are you taking care of yourself, your family, and what does that look like for the future if we don't have Democratic leadership?
That's pretty much how our conversation went, was that there's always somebody they care about. They may be hunters, but they don't want their kids being caught up in the next school shooting and other things where, you know, put them back in the, you know, caring role and caring for somebody else. And as you said, to start that, acknowledge their angst. You know, obviously there is privilege involved and more than that. But everybody still has some angst, and if you can make a connection there, you can talk about some of the other issues. I think one of the races, well, it'll happen in every race, Evers, Michaels, Ron Johnson, Mandela Barnes, but certainly in the 3rd Congressional District, Derek Van Orden and Brad Paff, you have the congressman from this area, heavily blue district, Mark Bocan, having no hesitation to take off the gloves and go after Derek Van Orden in a neighboring district that is evenly split. It is got a lot of rural territory, and it's got a lot of men who are going to look at Derek Van Orden's commercial and go, oh, he's that nice guy next door sitting on a motorcycle, you know, rather than the very dangerous positions and things that they have. And so I kind of want to take my last question and go to that and say, you know, there's a lot of men that have to be reached there to look at the two candidates and figure out who's not just who's going to work for them, who says the right things, who hangs a flag in their garage, but who's going to support the people that those male voters, care about.
I think in the third CD, it's important to look at young voters again. And I think when you engage with some of the younger voters, and I know that there are younger farmers who are starting families out there, making sure that the older generation of men who will be coming out to vote or need to vote understand that that need to actually create connections with younger generations in order for their family to be safe as well. And I think the more that we can amplify how dangerous DVO is, and I use his initials because honestly, I don't even like saying his name. The fact that he is not someone who should be looked up to when he is a bully to teenagers, when he was at the January 6th insurrection and continues to engage in Twitter fights instead of actually understanding what his community needs. So if the male voters in the third CD understand that this is not someone who is going to help you help your communities, I think that it's about agency and making sure that those voters feel empowered. And that's not going to happen with DVO. All he's going to do is ensure that we continue to lead down a dangerous path towards fascism, that he doesn't care about you or your family.
And in the less than a minute that we have left here, just what is your quick message to anybody who might still be on the fence about supporting Governor Evers for re-election versus Tim Michaels as some kind of a fresh business outsider?
He doesn't care about Wisconsinites or Wisconsin business. Tim Michaels is someone who vehemently opposes rights and freedoms. He doesn't believe in marriage equality. He wants stricter abortion laws. He doesn't believe that rape or incest should have any exception to a woman's or a pregnant person's right to choose. And to be honest, he is someone who even opposes his own business practices. His business actually has folks who are unionized, but yet he is a leader who doesn't even understand the needs of his own business people. I think that he is dangerous. He is somebody who is not connected to Wisconsin, has more connections to Connecticut, from my understanding. Mm-hmm. And he has no business running for office.
State Representative Francesca Hung, thank you so much for your time. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Yep, you as well. We'll be back to wrap up this hour's conversation next. You're up north. Well, we're glad you listen on the radio or on TuneIn, but if you happen to catch the internet version of the show over Facebook and Twitter just now, you saw Luke was really hoping to play this song, We Are the Champions, that I would ask Fran about zucchini, and he was going to claim victory because she was going to talk it up, but she made clear there's ways that it can be extremely bland, and if you're throwing a truckload of chocolate chips into bread and calling it zucchini, you're doing it wrong. So, Luke, I'm not sure the song applies. Nice try, though.
Producers, I don't know, overruling, I guess? what do you want to call this?
I think she gave a nice mixed answer about that zucchini has its place, but it's not going to work in everything because it can be very bland.
That's fair, but I would argue she took a stance of too much of a good thing cannot be good is essentially the way that I heard it. And I guess, yeah, you have to listen to the show on Facebook to be able to get the full opinion of zucchini from State Representative Francesca Hung. But essentially, I take that stance too. Too much of a good thing can be bad, but when you're trashing zucchini and you're just looking for the reinforcement of your opinion, she still said it was delicious. She loves it raw with a little olive oil and some sea salt. And I haven't tried that yet, so I'm going to try it now this weekend with all of the zucchini that I plan to receive from people sending me their unwanted zucchini.
I know, for some reason, you were really thinking I was going to show up here with a garbage bag full of zucchini for you. And I don't have enough time in the day to care to do that, actually. But I'm glad I had you fearful all this time that I was going to show up and fill your car with it, that, you know.
Yeah, I almost left my car unlocked in the parking lot yesterday just to see if a bag of zucchini would appear on the front seat like you and Dr. Lyerly talked about earlier this week. But I did not do that. So then I did have a slight concern yesterday that you were going to try to, you know, break into the car almost.
No. Here's how I learned my lesson about cars and filling them with things. And it's time for Grandpa to tell a story. Senior year of high school, we started a radio station, a little in-house radio station in the school, just a way to play music and give announcements and all of that. And so that fell to me and a couple of other people to do. And one day I made an announcement, you know, over the PA system as part of our morning show that said to Mr. Smith, the math teacher, Mr. Smith, would you go retrieve your car, please? Mr. Smith, would you please go take care of your car? And we hear the jingling of keys, and he goes running past in the hallway and comes to find out that he had been part of an April Fool's trick, and that, you know, nothing had happened, but there was talk about, you know, he being the math teacher that he was, I believe one year he actually did fill a car or something with ping pong balls or something along those lines. And then you were supposed to use all the calculations to guess, you know, the it and when. But in this case, it was just an April Fool's joke, making people think that, you know, it was a very small car and that we had just, you know, flipped it upside down and it was in the lobby. And would you please come and get your car? Obviously, it wasn't there. You know, haha. We told a good one on the radio show. Fast forward about 20 minutes or so, and I'm on my way to a first period class, and a substantial portion of the football team is seen walking toward me down the hall. And they escort me up to his part of the school. Now, this was one of those open concept schools, and all the classrooms were open and looked out into a common area. And there's the football team, putting my hands around a post, you know, one of the poles that holds the building up, one of the support posts, and wrapping my hands in like electrical tape or something like that. And, you know, taking a photo, which is still in the Apple Valley High School yearbook for 1982. And that makes sense once you realize that Mr. Smith was one of the coaches of the football team. And so he had an army of minions, and minions isn't the right way to put it when these are all big boys.
I was going to say, those almost classify as henchmen. Those were henchmen. Minion.
Yeah, those were henchmen coming at me. So you would think by now I'd learned my lesson about watching what you say on the radio, but I didn't, because that leads to Grandpa's next story. You hear the voice sometimes of Don Rue making these announcements and introductions, and he and I worked together in a small town radio station a very long time ago. And we heard a story about a customer who had a very bad experience in their business. And it was actually kind of comical what had happened to them. So comical that we thought, we've got to share this story. So we couched it. We just made it sound generic, like, oh, there was this business and this thing happened. We didn't couch it nearly enough. And nothing will motivate you and your behavior than your boss hauling you in and explaining why that business was also one of their advertisers and will not advertise again until we go to that business and personally apologize, which we did, of course, because we're not stupid. But somehow I managed to turn things back around on that boss. This same boss gave me a proposal sometime down the road to do an expanded morning talk show and said, we want you to go down to this local restaurant. We have a little portable studio. You'll set that up. You'll interview guests. You know, you'll talk to the restaurant owner about their specials. And I said, geez, you want me to do the 7:30 news and then get in the car and drive to the other side of town and get set up by 8 o'clock to do the show. And he says, oh, yeah, this will be great. Of course, there was, you know, no extra pay bump involved or anything like that. Again, small town radio. But he says, you know, and you'll get breakfast out of the deal. I'm like, okay, that's fine. So I actually did. I enjoyed it very much. Had some great guests. We would just sit at the lunch counter there, the breakfast counter, and the waitress would come and give us the daily specials at the end of the show. It all worked out great. Fast forward a little past the first month of doing it, and I get called down to the boss's office, and he's waving a piece of paper, and he says, what is this? I resisted the temptation to say a piece of paper and said, I don't know. And he says, this is a bill for all the breakfasts you've had over the past month. And I said, yeah, you said I could get breakfast out of the deal. He says, I meant you could order yourself breakfast if you wanted to. You're there. And I said, well, that's not how I interpreted it. And I think that's actually a very fair bit for the extra work that I'm doing. And it was, I'm not the world's best negotiator. I don't even know that counts as negotiating, but that was one of my first, what I'd say, grown-up victories is that from that point on, I got free breakfast every day for doing that. I'm getting none of that from Crute here. I'm getting none of this from Luke or Dom or anybody else. I'm doing this, you know, for you. I'm doing it for the kids, as they like to say. So, Luke, when you're renegotiating your contract here to be part of Up North News and its affiliated shows, just remember, free breakfast could be in it for you if you play your cards just right. Just don't trash any of the advertisers along the way. And don't cheese off the football coach. Take a break. We'll be back in our next hour right after this. This is Up North News.